F2A. Number 10A.
Today we will start with some exercise on text interpretation. You know that I advertised this course actually under the point of text interpretation, interpreting the Bible text, because as you know from earlier years, I feel that the subject on text interpretation is a subject that is very important. It is very important because there are various schools of thoughts on how to interpret a text and what is allowed in order to interpret a text. So I have to make myself very clear as to the method that I feel is scientific and not just humanly subjective, so that we have a common ground on which we interpret a text. We'll do that again, like last year, by reading some of the books in the Bible. I take very short epistles so that the text is not so long, so that we have time really to go through a whole epistle or to two epistles according to the time, and see how we can handle a text. Now, we have done that last year very extensively, especially at the end of last year's summer school on the Minor Prophets. We have taken the subject of text interpretation in the last 6 hours there very closely, and I think it's the best presentation at length, the most embracing sense of text interpretation that I have ever given. So if one wants to know more about the step-by-step method of interpreting a text, I think it's still good to go back to those last 6 hours in the summer school on the Minor Prophets, 1985. There we have seen that text interpretation is a step-by-step method, starting with the biblical text and reading the biblical text, trying then as a next step really to translate a biblical symbolism into metaphysical terms, so that instead of biblical symbols that are mostly symbols taken from nature, from life experience, that they are then translated, first of all, in the more abstract concepts of a metaphysical language. Once we have done that, that we have translated the text into metaphysical language, we then can go further and ask ourselves, now, does a text, a whole epistle, for instance, here, like Galatians, does that text just present one metaphysical statement after the other from beginning to end? Or is there some kind of a structure or layout in the text? And that naturally would help us very much to understand something, because interpretation is a method for understanding. Interpretation naturally means not only to translate from one symbolism to another symbolism, like from the biblical symbolism to a metaphysical symbolism, but interpretation goes much further. It shows then as a next step, can one see in that text some kind of a layout, some kind of an order of how the subject develops? So a new step is brought into the method, namely to translate then the metaphysical interpretation of the biblical text into an order of these ideas, of this metaphysical concept. Is there a general idea running through the whole text? What is that main idea that runs through the whole text? And that gives us then, so to say, also the metaphysical title for a biblical text. If we have a text like Galatians, that doesn't mean anything to us. What does Galatians mean? Galatians was a part of Asia Minor at that time, so that is no, that renders no insight into the science of being. So instead of Galatians, we would have to see what is the main idea that runs through that text. And so we would arrive at the conclusion and say, well, Paul always talks around that main concept, namely we'll perhaps feel out that he talks around the concept that we have to leave the old behind us, that we have to take up the new paradigm and see that we do not mix up the old with the new. Something like that would come out very soon, and we would see also that the new is showing that there is only one Christ, one law of Christ, only faith in Christ, and that that would be all sufficient for us. So in this way, we would first sense out what is the main subject of the whole epistle. So that instead of saying Galatians, we would say the all-sufficiency of the Christ, something like that. See? So then it makes already sense. Then the term Galatian is translated into the metaphysical meaning of it as, say, the all-sufficient Christ. In doing that, we have done something that is very important to see. That's another step in text interpretation, or another element or rule in text interpretation. Namely, in doing that, we have been thinking no more along single sentences or single terms, words, but along subjects, to think in subjects. And this is the very first great difficulty that every student has. Can he think in subjects instead of just words? Now, we know that words are very necessary, that they must be exact, that we must know what words mean, what each term means. We can look up Bible concordances and see what it means, or we can look up what the situation at that time was, what was the historical background perhaps about it, what were the customs at that time, and so get a kind of a feel for the surroundings of that Galatian field and the churches in Galatia, so that we are trying suddenly to think in subjects. Also, when one reads the text of a biblical text and translates it into metaphysical terms, then comes always the point, well, even if I have translated metaphysical terms, do I see in the sequence of those statements, do I see there a subject running through it? Naturally, we have seen the main subject is the most important one, that subject which runs through the whole of Galatians. Then one says, well, why do we need so many words, so many chapters and verses in Galatians, when I can reduce everything just to one main subject, namely the all-sufficiency of the Christ, and that we have to accept that? Then we say, why so many words? And the answer is, well, that main subject is looked at from various angles. It's not just one statement, but I can treat that subject from various angles, and therefore I can break up the main subject into further subjects, so to say, so that I begin to see what is the line of reasoning that goes through that subject. Now, we have seen that we can do that very easily when we know the tonality of the capitalized terms. If we do not know that, then we cannot interpret the text according to subjects. That we cannot do. And this is why it is so difficult to understand the line of reasoning in a book in the Bible or in a chapter in the textbook here in Galatians. How then do other people interpret the Bible? We know that there are thousands and thousands of books written by very intelligent and scholarly trained theologians that also, who also write about Galatians, who also interpret Galatians. They too cut up the whole text of the Galatians into various subjects, but those subjects are not the same as ours. When you take such a treatise from a theologian, you will see that he also has headings and subheadings in the flow of the text. But the theologians approach that text with a theological mind, therefore with theological concepts. Therefore, their standard with which they measure a text is molded by their theology. Whereas we approach the same text not with a theological concept, but we approach that text through our spiritual culture in the capitalized terms. So our standard according to which we measure a text are the capitalized terms. Like here in Galatians, there are seven subjects, and they are presented in the Christ order. Well, we can only see it as a Christ order because we first have within our consciousness the spiritual culture to know what the Christ order means, what it implies if something is laid out in the Christ order of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Therefore, our consciousness has another grid according to which we lay out a text than the theologians have. And so we break up the subject at different points than the theologians. And our caption for it, or our epitomes for it, are purely spiritual, are dictated by the tonality of the capitalized terms. Whereas the theologian, he also breaks up the subject and gives caption or epitomes or titles, usually he gives the title, that is either theological or that it has something to do with the history of a biblical book or of the story told in the biblical book. Just as you have so often a Bible, I don't know which Bible you use, but many Bibles that we use have at the beginning of a chapter have a short description of what is in the chapter and say, well, from first so-and-so to first so-and-so, you have this and this subject, and from the first verse on, you have another subject. I don't know which Bible you have in front of you. Mine, for instance, has that. And when one reads that, they give a caption that has to do actually with the story told in the text, whereas we would give caption or epitomes that are purely dictated by the tonality, by the spiritual tonality of the capitalized terms. We would have to present first what principle is showing here, then what life is showing here, truth and love is showing here, so that you can see that we get a different interpretation than a theologian. Now, there are not only interpretation of the Bible by theologians, there are also interpretation by ordinary people that are not trained in theology. The ordinary, the average Bible reader, he also reads the Bible. He not even tries to find out how a book in the Bible is built up. He says, all I want to get from the Bible reading is that it teaches me something, that I get something out of the text, so that his approach to the text is purely subjective, emotional, or religious, subjective, religious, and he feels that if he reads the Bible, he gets something out of it, he gets some comfort out of it, he gets some exalted sense out of it, and may leave the Bible with a much better attitude, with a much greater assurance in God, and so on. So that also is an interpretation. But it would be a very subjective, humanly subjective interpretation. It is the approach that says, I read the text and I listen what the text tells me. And the me is usually agreed, agreed that is built according to emotions, religious sense, and according to the mood we are in, the text says to us something different every time. So this is what we would call a humanly subjective interpretation. Now, what is our method of interpretation? And this is very important for everybody who follows our teaching, that he is very aware of the method which we use. Unfortunately, I have not written very extensively about text interpretation. I think the longest statement we have in a written statement is in my book on the seven synonymous terms. There, at the end of the book, on page 324 to 335, so it's only about 11, 12 pages, I have presented in a nutshell what we understand as scientific interpretation. And I feel it is important that the student acquaints himself with those dozen pages deeply, so that he begins to get into the new mood of interpretation. It's quite clear. We all sit here and had a training at school, and no one who is sitting here has had a training in text interpretation. No one who is sitting here. Therefore, we are not schooled in that subject. And therefore, we all have our own method of reading a text, no matter if it's a text in the Bible or in the textbook or in a newspaper or in another book or in an article in the newspaper. We should be able to apply, so to say, our method of text interpretation to anything that we read, because then we can orient ourselves what we read and can place what we read within our own system of reference and see much better what such a text is actually telling us, what is left out, what is not stressed in it, and so on. Now, furthermore, we not only have books that have to be interpreted, we also have life experience that has to be interpreted. We also live in a world, and that world needs to be interpreted. We must know where we are. We must know how we have approached that world. We must know what that world is presenting at that moment. We have to be able to compare it with the world of yesterday and then with the world of today, and see what is the world of tomorrow. We have to interpret, so to say, constantly from morning to night. Not only text, but also life must be interpreted, or the world must be interpreted. Now, what then is our measurement, our standard? I have said, well, our standard is the seven and the four and the four. These are the only measurements according to which we measure everything that is going on. And if we can train ourselves into that way of interpretation, then we can interpret revelation. What is revelation? Now, we say the book is a book that has been revealed to the writers of the book. We say the textbook is a book that has been revealed to the author, to the writer and author of the textbook. So, interpretation, first of all, tries to interpret revelation. Now, what is revelation? If we take that term in its pure sense, and not just what people call revelation, when something from the unconscious or from the collective unconscious comes up to the surface and then say, well, I have a new insight, that's naturally not revelation. Revelation is really only that which God has revealed. Therefore, only that which the divine principle reveals to the universe, either through books or through life experience, is a true revelation. So the author of revelation is always our capitalized terms, always God. Those prophets, they all were telling the Spirit of the Lord came upon me. And then they were delivering the message. Mrs. Eddy said that she is not the author of the textbook, that God dictated it to her, that it is a revelation from God. Now, this is the crux of text interpretation. If God reveals himself, whatever way and shape and form it does, if God is at the same time understandable through a science, therefore God reveals himself in a scientific way and not in an emotional way, not in an esoteric way, not in a magical way, not in a mysterious way, but in a scientific way, then God reveals himself through the categories of being. And that's the main point. He reveals himself, therefore, through the categories of science, and not through any other standard, through any other form. Therefore, we see that if we want to really get to know and to understand what the revealed text tells us, then we have to interpret the text with a consciousness that is cultured in the categories of being. God reveals himself through the categories of being, and therefore only like can understand like, therefore only a consciousness that is cultured in the categories of being can also understand and see and hear and read the revelation of God. Only like understands like, so the category of being and the category of understanding being through science must be the same. Therefore, we cannot approach the text and say, I wonder what the text tells me. This is humanly subjective. I have to approach a text with an understanding within me, with a consciousness within me that is cultured in the categories of being, and therefore through that grid of consciousness, the text is sieved through and put into its category and into its system. So through the grid, so to say, is that a good term? Through the grid of the system of science, the text shines through, and that whole text as one light is going through that grid of the categories and comes out at the other end in its categorized sense, in its systematic layout as a text or as life experience. And this is, therefore, our attitude of text interpretation. So, when we are going to read the text here in Galatians, we do many things at once. First of all, we have to read the text in its biblical form. We have to understand the situation at that time in Galatia. We have to understand what was going on theologically in that time when the new paradigm was being shown. We have then to see how can we translate those biblical terms into metaphysical terms. Then, when we have done that, we can say, is there somewhere a break in the flow of the subject? So we begin to think in subjects. Has a text the subject of one of those 15 root notions which we know? The 7 and the 4 and the 4, these are our 15 root notions. Has a text anything to do, say, with principle? Or has it anything to do with the Christ? Or with the Word? Or with the divine signs? Or with absolute Christian signs? That is what we have to filter out through our grid that we have within ourselves of the categorized consciousness. And in this way, the text then falls into an order, so that the subject, one after the other subject, seeing where the breaks are introducing another subject, then a break and another subject, and then finally, when we have the whole interpretation in this way, we can ask ourselves, now, what kind of order is there revealed? And seeing that, that brings us then further and can say, oh, it is laid out in the Christ order, for instance. And so we find out that the text is showing us the Christ translation from God to man for a specific situation. And in this way, we arrive at a clear interpretation that is equal to the revelation of God. That it does not interpret something different than the revelation itself. And this is a point I want to make very clear, because this is not accepted. So you have to know why we do or why we use this method. You have to be very sure in it, or else others will come and say, no, God is infinite and he reveals himself infinitely differently to each one. Well, that is true in a sense, but not in a primordial sense. It reveals always itself through its science, through its own nature, therefore through its own categories, but naturally touches each one individually, but always through the system of science.